Okay, so this is the part of the podcast where I take listener, reader questioners. And, you know.
It never fails once we get to this point.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
You know, I say I will literally ask anything that anybody wants of me. So this is probably the most questions I think we've ever had. I'm going to fire them off at both of you.
They're all from Mubgantha.
Most of them are. I'm going to do my best to attribute to who the questions came from. It's a little bit difficult because I kind of had to reassemble these. In a different window. Okay, these are the rapid fire questions for the third Morning Glory Study Hall podcast. Here's question number one. Oh, and for people that have never heard this before, you know, normally I think I've only done this with Nick, and now Joe is going to be joining us as well. The questions are for both of you. So question number one, and this is the first of quite a few from Upgunther on Twitter. Why was Hodge avoiding Ike in issue 12 and 13?
Yeah, it remains to be seen, right? First of all, I should say we joke about him, Gunther, but like his questions are always amazing, and really insightful stuff. We got a little bit, you know. They ended up being in the same room, obviously, in 13. And we got a little hint in terms of maybe the dynamic, but there's certainly a lot more to tell there. So yeah, it's a good question to ask.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reason why David and the Cylinder are never shown in the same panel?
No,
they are shown in the same panel. Issue one. There's one of David creeping up behind Brendan, and they're both in the shot. The Cylinder and David.
Oh, man.
There you go.
Shut Call down.
Call him out.
When the kids time travel or eyes are open, they puke. Why didn't Hunter puke in the temple or with future Jade?
It's a good question. You know, certainly the vomiting seems brought about by certain things, but I should also point out that time travel is maybe not the only time that we've seen the vomiting in the book. God knows we've seen a lot of it. Maybe not quite that like concrete in terms of cause and effect.
I do love that somebody finally put all the vomiting pictures together on Tumblr in a set.
I think it was Upgunther that did that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Even better. For any issue dealing with fixing the timeline, did you purposefully not show Hodge in timeline of issue 25?
Yeah, I did. I stayed away from... the stuff that we chose to show in 25, you know, was because it all linked up to the next event. If we would have tried to drop in a lot of the Hodge stuff and the Casey and Hodge stuff, I think it would have really confused it. So, it's not really meant to be a comprehensive recap, obviously. So, yeah, no particular story reason. It was more just that the book worked better, leaving that stuff to the side.
Is the blurring vision connected to Bell's theorem, or things being changed by someone in the past because Hodge told Casey she can change anything? Issue number one, Darimount was faculty correlator. Issue 21, it was Hodge. Hodge told Zoe she's not a killer, did something in the past change her to make her that way, and whenever Jade wakes up from her trip, she learns something new.
Nice 12-part question there. You know, obviously, I gotta do a bit of a no comment. We have seen the double vision stuff a lot, there's a lot of speculation as to what exactly that means. On a couple of the other points there, obviously with the Darimount Hodge thing, in terms of who the faculty liaison is, I wouldn't interpret it that way. I think that the faculty members are assigned to different students, or that, you know, that year Hodge was the faculty liaison for the incoming students. You know, it could depend on what field the students are going into. You know, so there's a lot of different possibilities for why Hodge would be Vanessa's liaison. It definitely wasn't a time change effect. What were a couple of the other ones there? The one about Zoe is an interesting idea. You know, I mean, one of the most interesting Zoe bits is that, you know, Hodge told her that she's not a killer when we certainly have seemed to have seen otherwise, and we will get closure on that. Any other one there?
No, that's all of them.
Okay.
Cool. I do want to say I love this segment of the show because I try to actively avoid too many direct questions when we do the talks. I like to ask bigger questions and ideas about the themes. Yeah, and then with this, I get to ask, you know, every question I may have wanted to, and then chose to avoid.
Yeah.
Is there a specific distinction between monastery and shrine in the book? If not, is Irina responsible for the destruction of the school?
Oh, it's a good question. we've had Jade obviously say that the place is a monastery, and we had back in issue one we had Daramont say that it used to be a monastery. Shrines, what Vanessa's referring to is something a little more limited. It's something else. It's not speaking about the grounds proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not what Vanessa means in that instance.
And I don't know if you said it. Is Irina responsible for the destruction of the school?
I thought that was one or the other. I mean, the school looks like it's doing fine. You know, I mean, they've got some problems with misplaced students, but you know, the arena hasn't seemed to have destroyed the school.
You sure? Is that your final answer? Because they do, you know, they go to that destroyed version of it in the future. I think that's what he's more referring to.
Hold on. What are you referencing?
When the kids are time displaced, I think the inherent assumption is that they are moved into the future rather than the past. And in that situation, the school looks rather disheveled. Perhaps that it had been. I think I theorized at one point that it had been under fire, literally. Rather destroyed. Perhaps.
You know, I wouldn't necessarily classify that as destroyed. It might, you know, disheveled. Yeah, might be a more appropriate term.
That's when the janitor quit.
right. It sounds like she just kind of, you know, mussied the place up a bit. Those doesn't sound like much of a destruction to me, but. No, I don't think that we've shown anything of the sort.
Okay, here's something that I wanted to ask, and I chose not to because Upgunta asked for me. How did Abraham know that Irina was coming for Ike? How did Abraham know that Irina was coming?
Oh, sorry. How did Abraham know that Irina was coming for Ike?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, he seems to have some inside info there, doesn't he?
Uh-huh.
He seems to know something that, given the chain of events, you would think that he maybe shouldn't know. So, you know, but then, you know, Abraham seems to have knowledge of lots of things that, you know, it's difficult to understand how he should know. I mean, as far as we understand, Abraham's supposed to be dead in his office, you know, killed by his kids. So there's a lot to that.
Is Irina the girl crying in issue number 13?
No.
I actually, I remember that very well because I was super convinced it was Zoe.
Yeah.
And so. If I may be so bold, I believe that's Akiko.
No.
Well, you know, it was either this one or this one. Or
attention, everyone! I'm officially declaring a three strikes you're out rule for the girl, for the crying little girl in the closet. you're now guessed every girl with dark hair.
Okay, this one was a little bit difficult. His question was, how much of the Psalm thing did I get right? And I figured that I needed to kind of explain this, so I had him send me the link, and I didn't copy paste anything. I just kind of summarized it. This is in reference to his theory about Psalm 18. The sorrows of death compassed me, and the floods of ungodly men made me afraid, having been written by David in reference to God coming to those who have cried out, with the earth shaking and the foundations, coming apart, as we'd seen when David touches Akiko in issue number 24, and then the ground falls apart, which when you take into consideration with the "so we create our own gods" line, would theoretically mean, if I'm understanding him correctly, would theoretically mean that David is a created god. So how much of the Psalm thing did he get right?
I don't know about the last part. You know, but in terms of the context of the song with the book, you know, that's all correct. You know, obviously, you know, I didn't just pull that out, you know, because it was I didn't just pull that out randomly. It was something that was very apropos. So, I'm a big sucker for Psalms, period. Like, a lot of them are they're so amazing to read. Like, the language is just so beautiful. Like, the emotion that some of the lines can elicit is I think really amazing. And "the sorrows of death compass me," it's like just one of my favorite lines. I just think it's fantastic. So, all that stuff's spot on. The last bit, though, you know, who knows?
Moving away from Upgunta now, we have some questions from Macy, who's the one that puts together all the tiny chats.
Right,
Macy.
She says, "Is there any particular reason some characters have last names and some don't?"
This is a good question. I get asked about this sometimes. Yeah. Maybe in some cases yes, maybe in some cases no. Is maybe the best I can give there. There are a few who are just kind of overdue, certainly, but it just doesn't. One of the tricky things is it just doesn't come up that much. You know, like it just doesn't. Think about how many times you actually say somebody's last name when you're speaking to them or whatever. So it can be a little tricky. But I'm gonna knock out a bunch here soon, just to kind of make people feel like, I know that people feel like they're like, you know, wiki entries and stuff aren't very complete when it's all on a first name basis. So I realize I should give up some more.
Well, it was funny because the staff was all last names with no first names,
right? Right.
And then we got like Susan and Reginald.
Right. Right.
Can Fortunato even experience anything resembling joy?
Yes. He's a living, breathing human being, just like all of us. He's he's got his time coming. I think if I've done one of the truants a disservice so far, it's probably him. So I got some work to do, but you know, that was very similar to I'm sure Joe remembers this, like back during like the first arc and in like even the first half of the second, you know, Jun was like a blank slate to a lot of people, like, and it was just about kind of getting the time to get to know him. And then once we did 9 and everything, people were, you know, way more attached to him than, you know, like, you know, he got kind of his humorous moments to shine in the third arc with Hunter and that relationship, and all that kind of fleshed him out more. But all through the first arc, I heard that he was kind of a non-entity. And so, you know, it's fortunately, I said a little rougher because, again, he's had to do some things that the readership finds shady. So, you know, we've got some work to do there. But, you know, you'll like him, I promise. Maybe. Maybe not.
Out of every major character, who do you think had the hardest design to pin down?
Oh, is that for me? Mm. Sure. I guess. Oh, I don't know. I'm just assuming. Man, out of all the characters, my gut says David, just because the whole concept of David was really kind of, you know, new to me when Nick explained him to me years ago. But most of the kids were, you know, they're pretty easy. The arena has been difficult just to, because of the stuff we talked about with Akiko, just for me to try and make her look unique and individualized, you know. And I do stuff with Akiko too, like, you know, their uniforms are different. Akiko's skirt is longer and plaid, and Arena's is way, 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 way short. And but, you know, a lot of their scenes haven't been in their uniforms, so that's, you know, that's been, you know, kind of a thing where I have to juggle for those two. So
Akiko has the awesome leg warmers.
Yes, she does. She has the awesome leg warmers.
She's got the, I don't know how people can mix them up with
yeah.
rocking those. I should add to this though. I remember back when the initial designs were coming in, because like Joe and Rodin both did designs on the first six, like. And at the same time, without knowing that the other did them, like right at the same time. And I can remember that how similar they were for the most part. Like, it was scary, mm-hmm. like how close they were. The big divergent one that I remember was Jade.
Yeah.
Jade was really different between the two, and I think that Jade ended up being a bit of an amalgamation. Like, you know, she was sort of a mix. So that's the one that I always remember. Is kind of the rest were kind of like immediate, and then she was the one that didn't quite take shape.
Back to Upguntha. Now that Joe has become this beast of an artist, is there any issue that he would redraw?
I would redraw the entire first arc if I could, just because I feel like, you know. It's always hardest for an artist to look at their early stuff, and to me, like, I mean, there's some good stuff in there. I'm still proud of a lot of that stuff. Like, I, you know, like, I still love the Descent in issue one, and the shot of Jade on the phone in issue one, and, you know, a lot of issue five is great. But, you know, I think going into this book, I think I started to get a little stage fright, I'll admit, after, you know, our first issue came out, and, you know, it did get a lot of, you know, eyes on the book, basically, because nothing, I don't think anybody had ever bought anything I ever worked on up to that point, so this was kind of a new experience, so I kind of started to second guess myself, and I wish, you know, I could go back and, you know, now that I feel a lot more comfortable and more confident with the book, that, you know, there's stuff there I wish I could go back and fix. But, you know, hey, whatever. It's like I said, there's still stuff in there that, you know, I like. So,
yeah. Or we're just gonna. I know that I'm gonna George Lucas the shit out of this book for the rest of my
life. Special edition.
I'm just gonna tweak and tweak and tweak until you don't even recognize it anymore. You know. By the end of it, Zoe will have shot Arena. Is basically where I'll have taken it by the end. So
you heard it here first, people. Make the T-shirts. Zoe shot first.
Right.
A sacrifice must be made. Did Jade kill herself in that cell?
In that cell.
I think it's in reference to the end of the arc, which would be no, because you guys kind of. said she comes back.
End of 20? You mean at the end of 25? Did yeah. Jade kill herself then?
Yeah.
No. But that doesn't mean that she hasn't been shot.
Sure. next question is Alexander Hemsley. It is, will we be going back to a school setting now that Woodrun is over? Well, Woodrun's not exactly over, is it? It's
I mean, this is the middle of it. This first arc is really just a continuation. Like things do not go back in the box in 26 or anything like that. We've still got an arc of big things like that are all still this massive confrontation and Arena's play and all the things that have resulted from it. Past that, I've been kind of open that we gotta get back to a school at some point, right? It's a book about six kids trapped in a boarding school. We gotta have the boarding school at some point. But that does not mean that things are going to be like they were, so there's some major status quo upheavals coming. I think there's still plenty of surprises still to come.
Gary Hogan wants to know, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, we never heard that before.
I don't know what to tell you, dude. You gotta do some of the work. Look, there were times during the second and third arc where that kind of stuff would get me down. Now, I've kind of recognized that, like, that's the nature of this kind of beast. And the other thing, though, is like we were talking about how in that chat, like when everybody immediately, connected Benjamin to Benjamin Gerhardt, there are loads of people out there who certainly they don't know what's going on per se, because it's a long form mystery and you're not supposed to, but who are reading it and rereading it and following it and putting the pieces together. There's certainly, there's study hall to keep people, to keep people in the loop on things and to help, kind of guide you to these things. And that's just the kind of story this is. It's meant to be immersive. It's meant to be demanding. But you're still around after 25 issues, and I certainly appreciate that very much. Like, and hopefully you'll think the payoff is worth it.
We're back with Upgantha.
Oh my.
He would like to know any connections between Sumerian Laboratory where life was created and the one from issue 10.
Well, the Sumerian stuff's interesting, it will not hurt you at all, I think, in this book to go back and at least, do the Wikipedia versions of that stuff. They had a really fascinating mythology, and it's pretty much, the oldest that we have on record. And so it's fascinating in that it's like our, people's ears will perk up when they hear this, but, they are in some ways our oldest gods, and that's a fascinating thing to look at. And, the influence that Sumerian mythology had on Judaism and how many Sumerian myths are clearly predecessors to stories in Genesis. That's all interesting stuff. I'm not saying that, you need to go on Amazon and buy six books about it, but, having a little background on that will make certain aspects of the story a little richer.
Moving away from Upgantha, we've got, Hansel Moreno. Joe, how do you put up with Nick Patara at conventions?
Oh, Hansel. it's very difficult to put up with Nick Patara. He's a real son of a bitch. No, I'm just kidding. I love Nick. He's Nicky Poo is my boo. Nick's great. It's funny, we talk, and this is a weird tangent to go on, but like we talk about how, earlier about how you don't call somebody typically by their last name, but in my house, like, I kind of have to. Like, we have to, like, because I'll talk to Kim, like, she'll think I'm talking about Nick, the writer Nick. I'm like, no, Nick Patera. So we've kind of had to come up with nicknames for the two of you to kind of tell you. So you're Writer Nick, and then he's Cousin Nick because of this ridiculous story about how he, Patera thinks that he and I are related, which is, you know, his best friend is my wife's step cousin. And so somehow that makes us related. So, yeah. So now he's Cousin Nick. Yeah.
Nick Patera is, in my view, maybe the single greatest addition to comics over the last few years.
He's a character.
Just watching the two of you on Twitter is a fun part of my day.
Nick, when are you going to HeroesCon?
I've been to HeroesCon 2 or 3 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago. You know, I love the show. You know, it hasn't happened. I'm in the UK, and so for a lot of shows, bringing me over and stuff is kind of a pricey proposition, and you know, I totally understand that. And you know, for me, for my schedule, you know, it's probably a good thing because, you know, I have a hard time saying no to shows that invite me. You know, but at the same time, if I went to the mall, I wouldn't get any work done. So hopefully I'll be back at Heroes at some point soon, though. I really do like the show, and they treated me great the year that I was there.
This is from David Harper. Do you feel that creating such a labyrinthian plot limits your opportunity to find a bigger audience?
I used to worry about that a lot more than I do now. Because it hasn't, you know, and I think that if there's something that I think we, like, you know, either prove or just kind of like, you know, give somebody else thinking about, you know, doing a story like this some inspiration, it's that, I think we've shown the opposite. I understand, like a good example is kind of 26, like 26, right? We're doing a dollar issue, and, with most comics, what you would want to do there is a jumping on point that either laid out the status quo for the book very quickly, you know, or kind of recapped it at length. But either way, you know, something that a new reader could grab off the shelf for a dollar and get up to speed. And, you know, I think when everybody sees 26, you know, it'll be immediately apparent that that's not what 26 is. And that, you know, the intention of 26 is more bringing in trade readers or maybe encouraging lapsed readers to get caught up, because with a book like Morning Glories, it's almost impossible not to start at issue one. I really don't see how you could, you know, enjoy the book starting at any other point to its, you know, to the way that it's intended. You know, of course it makes us have to work extra hard in other ways to get people to jump on and to get people involved, but you know, again, our audience has grown, like it, you know, like attrition doesn't exist on this book anymore. Sometimes we've slid on singles, but every time we've slid on singles, we've increased on trades and digital. So that just tells me that people are either switching their delivery method. You know, but even I should actually, that's not the case. The increase on trades and digital is bigger than the attrition on the singles. We've only lost about, 2,000, which is about, you know, a little bit less than 20%, from day one, from initial orders of issue one. So we haven't had much attrition at all. It's been a very gentle line downward, with occasional spikes up, and these last few have all gone upward. So it's challenging. You know, you have to think different ways. But I think that we live in an age when people can pick up a $9.99 trade, or they can, you know, pick up the first issue on Comixology, and these things are readily available at any point in the series, and they tend to just kind of catch up quickly. So So yeah, it's a different kind of beast, but no, so far it's all worked out about as well as we could hope. I wish we had a higher singles number, and I say that a lot, that I think that our singles number is a lot lower than it should be. But we didn't launch that high. And once that happens, it's very hard to move that needle upward. There's a bit of a ceiling there that exists for pretty much any book, but my secret dream is that the things that we're doing right now with the season change and with the exercise issues might actually allow us, if we ever beat our number one orders on our singles, you'll hear me crowing about it, because that'll be a huge thing that we'll have worked towards. We're not quite there, but again, you know, trades, we got in our orders for volume 4, and they're about 30% higher than orders for volume 3, which is insane. You know, that's a massive increase, and that tells me we're fine. Like that we're doing good. And it's been a long time since 3 came out. So that's really, really encouraging.
Leanne S. would like to know, are parallel universes and or timelines involved? If so, are they parallel or stacked on top of each other?
Unfortunately, I'm not going to quite be able to answer that one. But, you know, these are great directions to think in. Don't be surprised if the answer is more of an all of the above combination type thing, you know, like that this book has always been about exploring a variety of big sci-fi concepts that we all know and trying to kind of put a unique and new spin on them. So we've spent a lot of time with time travel recently, but that doesn't mean that that's the only one that we're going to have some fun with.
Does Irina know who the headmaster is?
That's a great question, because it would certainly seem like she would, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like anything, there could be caveats to that. There could be deception involved. I mean, if there's one thing that Irina seemed to imply in a conversation with Fortunato was that there are deceptive elements to the headmaster. So tricky, but you know, it would certainly, while she hasn't confirmed it, it would certainly seem like she would.
Is Hunter going to turn into Doctor Who with Hsiao as his companion?
Well, it's good to know the questions are getting just as loopy as we are. I think we've established that I'm not as up to date on Doctor Who as I need to be, and so don't look for it to play into the mythology too much. But that would be pretty adorable, right?
Sure, that should be another fan written. Dream sure. script there to go sure, in the sure. back of the book.
Sure.
Does anyone get a happy ending?
We're a ways away. You know, I will say is when I think about the ending, I want very much for you know, you to walk away with strong feelings about these characters in the same way that, you know, on my favorite books like Why, is probably the bright and shining example, you know, that thinking about these characters should cause you to feel strong emotions. So, you know, as long as you feel that at the end, I think in terms of that question, you know, that's the goal.
This question is from...
But none of those characters got happy endings.
This question is from Herb Drangus. And the question is, will one of the students ever die from a dildo through the skull?
There we are, finally. Oh, wait and see.
That's going to make it into the book now.
Yeah.
James Adkins would like to know, is that scrap of paper that the person is reading on the first page of the first Morning Glories issues one of those quote-unquote special blank papers?
Ooh, good question. Lots more about the blank papers, and in I think it's going to be in season two for sure.
Also, is the person reading that piece of paper future Ike?
No comment.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Does David make any noises? For example, could you hear his footsteps?
I'm going to go with no.
Okay. I did notice he casts a shadow.
Just cast a shadow, yeah. I don't know. You know, I mean, part of the beauty of working in comics is you don't have to think about the auditory stuff as much as you might. So, yeah, tricky. You know, physics of corporeal beings. You know, it's a tough one. So.
And to wrap this all up, we're back with David Harper. What did you guys think of Primer?
Yeah, didn't we talk about this already?
Yeah, how can he know that?
Yeah.
Joe, have you seen Primer?
Actually, I have not. I was staying out of that conversation.
Oh, that's another thing I got to bring with
you. I'm bringing you Blu-rays, brother.
All right. Better than what you gave me last year at C2E2.
What was that?
What did I give you at C2E2 last year?
500 booklets to bring back.
What was
Which
it?
Which I still have because I don't have Rodine's address. So, yeah.
Oh, sure. Oh, do you still not have Rodine's address? Have we still not sent those back? Oh, hey. Apologies to everyone waiting for those.
Yeah. They're at my office. I'm looking at them right now.
for now, years. Oh, yeah. We dropped the ball pretty horribly on that one.
When is Batman going to be a character?
How do you know he already isn't a character?
Right.
I think Wolverine Wolverine and Superman are the only superheroes I remember having cameos.
Sure. What Scott Snyder hasn't told you is that year zero is actually Morning Glories.
Oh. All right. Yeah. And the very last question.
Yeah.
If you could cross over Morning Glory Academy with any other comic book school, what school would that be?
There are a lot of comic book schools. I think I have to go with, you know, the Xavier Academy because, you know, Nick and I are old school Claremont fans, and, you know, I love the New Mutants. So, yeah, I would go with the Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters.
Yeah, I might go with the same, but there's a few really good ones. Maybe the school from the faculty, since it would just be fun to see all the things that I ripped off come face to face.
Fortunately, the faculty is only a movie.
Sure.
So you're in the clear.
Just in comics. Oh, definitely the Xavier School. Plus, I mean, God, the bank that we would make off an X-Men crossover. we would just be loaded. So, you know, yeah, of course.
You know, I'm reminded.
Please let's do an X-Men crossover. How's that? How about we'll do that? We'll do an Avengers Arena crossover.
You know, I'm reminded in Cerebus with Dave Sim, there was supposed to be an X-Men crossover between Cerebus and the X-Men with Chris Claremont, and that never ended up happening, but Dave Sim certainly, I don't know if you guys have read Cerebus, there's a lot of X-Men and Claremont jokes in there.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So you could get away with doing that, I think.
Yeah, but there's no money in that. We need an actual X-Men Morning Glories crossover. Like, that's actually, I will sell out in a heartbeat.
Do a Halloween issue and do a variant where everybody is dressed like a superhero in the X-Men or something like that.
Yeah, sure. No, I know that Jason, I know that Jason Aaron's, he said very nice things about the book, and you know, so,
you know, it's it's just a question of getting the lawyers together.